Sports Day for Kia. The Kia Sorento, Drive Car of the Year. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Welcome to Sports Day. 7 after 6, 922 11882 is our number tonight, and we've got a big program, and we've got plenty of time to talk. The Wildcats are going to be in action later on tonight, but Hayes, who else have we got coming up on the show tonight?
Well, we've got lots coming up on the show. Chris Mayne's going to join us after a big win for Nathan Buckley in his last game at Collingwood. Craig Gabriel, that is, will join us to talk about the French Open. Novak Djokovic gets through, and Stacey Marinkovic, they are undefeated, the West Coast Fever, doing really well. And on the weekend, Carl, the best game of footy I've seen in a long time. The worst game of footy I've seen in a long time. We also had a draw too, amongst other things.
Well, let's get into the news headlines for Polaris, Australia's number one off-road vehicle brand. Nathan Buckley goes out a winner. Jordan Ngoe was a star today, and Darcy Cameron booted 4 goals. That was very nice to see him achieve that. Round 13 rising star is Riley Thilthorpe. Now, Paul Hazelby and I are going to have a discussion around the rising star nominees a little bit later on. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts as well. Matty DeBoer has signed on for a year. We'll have a chat to him on Wednesday. There's a few reports which I'll get into in a moment. Hey, spoke about Novak Djokovic. What a 5-set epic that was against Stefanos Tsitsipas. He was hoping to become the first Greek tennis player to win a Grand Slam event. Unfortunately, he fell short, but he started well, didn't he, winning the first 2 sets. The Wildcats in action tonight from 7:30. We'll keep you up to date. A do or die clash against the Illawarra Hawks. They won on Saturday without Mitch Norton, who was injured, but I do believe that he will play tonight. Kaylee McKeon, world record, inspired by her father's death, a 19-year-old from Queensland, 57.45 seconds. Gee, that's quick for the 100-metre backstroke. Ariane Titmus, also a Commonwealth and Australian record in the 400 freestyle. The second fastest behind Katie Ledecky, the famous American in history. So that is absolutely awesome. And Emily Seebohm, at 29 years of age, is headed to her fourth Olympic Games. Nick D'Agostino has parted ways with the Perth Glories, 23. He's Olympic bound. He was the second highest scorer for our Perth Glory this season. And today, Dave Rennie named a couple of our Western Force players to get in that squad. They are Seteliki Tamani and Feliti Kaituhu. Got that right, Hayes. They face France next month. And just lastly, 4 West Aussies to represent Australia at the Olympic Games in Tokyo. The Hockey Roos and Kookaburra squads were named today. Trent Mitten and Aaron Zalewski for the men, and Penny Squibb and Carrie Somerville for the women. So great to see those 4 West Aussies named in those respective teams.
Absolutely. A big day today, Carl. The big freeze. Collingwood getting a win for Nathan Buckley in his last game as coach. We'll catch up with Chris Mayne a little bit later. But what about Nathan Buckley? Buckley, what did you make of the performance today? You're saddened by that result, given that Collingwood hadn't been winning for him, but with the pressure going off, they performed. Their pressure was outstanding, but their skill level was better than it's been this year.
Yeah, look, I sort of wrote in the Sunday Times on the weekend that I felt that, you know, if I was an aspiring coach, that I'd take on Collingwood before I'd take on Carlton, who I included in that only because of the mid-season review and the pressure that seems to be mounting on David Teague for that very reason. But I think it was the same pressure that we saw coming on a bloke by the name of Simon Goodwin at the start of this season, where we felt that he might be in the firing line. All of a sudden, whilst he got beaten today, his team's 10-2 with the Western Bulldogs at the top of the table. And I think that for Collingwood, it can turn around pretty quickly, because the thing that has been done really well, they had 9 of their 2018 grand final side today. Now, you'd think that was only 3 seasons ago. We had a COVID season last year, which was not normal. So they've had 2019 and 2021, which is a season and a half, plus the one in between that was displaced everybody. But, you know, there's a core of young players that I think have all improved, and I'll be asking Maney a few questions later on this hour about a few of those players to see what he thinks.
And sometimes you need a year just to drop down, like Melbourne did, where you get to expose a lot of those young kids. If you may have injuries, I think the West Coast Eagles are going through it now. This time that they're going through could propel them over the next 2 or 3 years, because they are exposing new players coming into that system. But I think with Buckley, we know he was a champion player. We know he was a very good coach. Nearly got there, didn't he, but couldn't quite get it done in the grand finals, beaten by a kick. I think they're a winning culture too, aren't they? If you compare Carlton and Collingwood, Carlton is a losing culture, where at the Pies, they don't stand for losing for too long.
They're two foundation clubs of the Victorian Football League. They've been around for a long time. They're traditional football clubs. They've got very strong support. Carlton have probably struggled a little bit more in more recent times. Collingwood have certainly done a hell of a lot better off-field than what Carlton had. Carlton got themselves into trouble in days gone by, which it took them a while to dig themselves out of that. And, you know, they've chopped and changed a fair bit. One thing that you've got to credit Collingwood with, and it's probably a lot like Geelong and West Coast, who are the powerful clubs, and even Hawthorn to a degree, is the stability when it comes to their coaches. They've backed a coach in, they've given them a period of time, and Nathan Buckley's only the fourth coach since the AFL began, which is quite incredible.
And I think we're seeing the influence that Eddie McGuire had through that period too by keeping it stable. He said they'd never have EGMs through his time. He has left, and you can see what has happened. Hopefully they get it all together. But a big case, Carl, at the tribunal tomorrow. I want to talk about this. David McKay, of course, he's hit on Hunter Clark. Where do you stand? It's been sent straight to the tribunal today. The AFL clarified their position. It's a 3+ match suspension. But it's an interesting one again, and we've had this chat so many times, haven't we, on the show, in regards to, was it just a football act? Was he just a split second late, or was it a predetermined action by David McKay?
Well, I'm sure that for those that love their footy, they would have probably seen it 15 to 20 times by now, and it would have been replayed over and over. And if you want to go and have a look at it, just log into the AFL website and you can see it right there. But the AFL today basically put out a statement, which was interesting, that read this, that they alleged that player McKay carelessly engaged in rough conduct, in that it was unreasonable in the circumstances, in contravention of the AFL Tribunal Guidelines 4.4E, which prescribes that any conduct which is unreasonable in the circumstances. Now, as such, the AFL will argue this: regardless of whether player McKay, one, was contesting the ball, two, that he was bumping player Clark, or three, both. So whether he's contesting the ball or whether he was bumping, or both, that he still contravened the general prohibition on unreasonable conduct, including in contested the ball. So, and they've suggested that they are asking for a 3+ match suspension. Now, all I can base it on is I think there is some precedent here. It was said only a couple of weeks ago in Lockie Plowman's attack on the ball, when he, in a split second, he arrived that split second late for the ball, didn't get his hand on the footy, which is exactly the same as what's happened here with Hunter Clark. It didn't bounce the way of McKay. McKay's gone straight in, tucked the shoulder in, whacked him in the head, broken his jaw. He's going to be out for a few weeks, maybe the rest of the season, Clark. Probably not the rest of the season, but certainly a few weeks. Lockie Plowman got 2 weeks. On the basis of him getting 2 weeks, David McKay gets at least 3.
I think he'll get 3, but I'm split on this one because we looked at it closely and the ball actually bounced up on its point, didn't it? It could have actually bounced end over end and it would have gone closer to McKay in that situation. He may even got to the ball first. So then the whole thing changes. The contact comes from the other player and perhaps it wasn't as bad. But I think the AFL is keen to make a statement. I think we're all keen to protect the head. There was another retirement in the NRL, Carl, overnight. Boyd Coidner, of course, he got a concussion in the last year's State of Origin, hasn't played since. So serious.
29.
Absolutely. And he's one of the great players of that competition. So I think we need to get to a point where we don't see it. But I think we all have to take a deep breath and look at it as a what's best for the game in the long term. We've all grown up seeing that action, loving that action. You want your players to go hard for the footy, but I think players now will have to jump out of the way. They'll have to wait for their opponent to pick up the ball and then make the tackle. You can't go in with that sort of force, because if things do go wrong and you don't get the bounce, you're vulnerable. And I think that's what we're going to see.
So McKay was front on. The other thing is that I saw that he jumped in the air as well. So he's got a couple of other factors that are going to go against him here. But 9221882, love your thoughts on that on the program tonight. Now, already it's 6:15, almost 16 minutes past 6, 9221882. Chris Mayne is going to join us in a few moments' time. If you'd like to call through on the Sleepmaker open line, the maker of Australia's mattress, anything out of the weekend of sport, there's been so much. West Coast Fever undefeated, unbelievable. They're already up in the top two. Paul Gallen fights Justice Hooney on Wednesday as well. Just some of the other things that are bubbling around of the news. You can get Ranger confidence for the price of a quad. Visit your local Polaris dealer today. We'll be back with your calls and a focus in on the Eagles and Dockers, who both won on the weekend after this.
Sports Day for Kia, the Kia Sorento, drive car of the year, and Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load. This electrifying moment of the weekend, with thanks to NHP Electrical Products, 100% Australian owned.
Edwards now for West Coast. Harry goes to Yo. Last chance Eagles. Kick long for Ryan against it broad. He's turned his man. Ryan picks it up on the run. He kicks it. Kennedy! Kennedy has taken it. He's three straight tonight, is JK. That's mark number seven. This is disposal number 15. Kennedy plays on. Banana. Banana. Oh! It's the best banana he's ever kicked. He's put the Eagles in front. 13-7. 12-9. Carl's eating humble pie.
Yeah, Carl's eating humble pie. And today I baked the giant banana pie, and I had to consume it all on my own. It actually tasted really nice, but I wrote them off when they were 21 points behind midway through that last quarter. I thought against Richmond, a quality side, that they ain't coming back. But what do you think now, Paul Hazelby, on the back of what you saw from West Coast yesterday?
I did the same thing, Carl. I was thinking Richmond by how far in that game. It was incredible, wasn't it? And the atmosphere with inside Optus Stadium on a Sunday night was the best I've seen. I spoke about the Dreamtime game just last week, the feeling there, but this one surpassed that.
The best one was Collingwood and West Coast going back in that final a couple of years ago. That was the best one for me, but you're right, it was very, very loud.
What I do know, Shannon Hearn's still playing some good footy. Josh Kennedy is still playing some good footy, and both should go on, and David Mundy should go on. Go and get it done, both clubs. I think you can do that with a bit of confidence as well. I've had doubt about the next generation of the West Coast Eagles players coming through, but the last couple of weeks, they've got opportunity through injury. And without that opportunity, I wasn't as confident of their future in the next year or two. Luke Edwards was outstanding. What a great pick. He's finding the footy. He did that in the first week, but his last quarter was enormous on the weekend. Showed a bit of poise and class. Uses it very well. Turned one over, but he will learn from that. Love the work from Luke Foley down back. He was very good in the one-on-one contest and two. Used it really well as well. And Harry Edwards, the other guy, 200 centimetres, he's only going to get better. A good replacement when Jeremy McCubbin decides to give the game up. So all of a sudden you've got three younger players coming through. They took on the Tigers, who are at their best, who were playing great footy. I just love the way they moved the ball by hand. And they did that without Jack Darling playing well, and also Liam Ryan, who was very quiet until the last quarter. Some positive signs from Elliot Yeo, back from his third game now, and in that last quarter he stood up. So there's a lot to like. Can they contend this year? I think they need to get inside that top four. In my opinion, the West Aussie teams need to finish inside the top four to get every chance. But I'm not too concerned now about the year after and the year after that, Carl. I think they can keep contending, the West Coast Eagles, on the back of some of those young kids.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot more. I mean, Jake Waterman's only 23. Liam Duggan's only 24. Jermaine Jones, Oscar Allen, Josh Rotham, who are a little bit more advanced than the new guys. And I'll call them the new guys because they are Luke Foley and Luke Edwards. The two Lukes have only played two games, and Harry Edwards has played five.
Mm.
So there's a lot more younger players. I mean, how old's Tommy Cole? He wouldn't be that old, would he? 24? And I reckon Jacko Nelson would probably be about the same age, 25. So he's a year older, but that's half the team that played on the weekend. So they're a lot younger at the moment than what they've been for quite some time. And I think that the important part is that, you know, when you talk about Rotham, Oscar Allen, they certainly have been very, very efficient at both ends of the ground. Allen's been a good swing man, but went back forward. Rotham's played down back, and Liam Duggan is an important player. I think you saw his value back in the side. Whilst he probably didn't reach the heights of what he was prior to getting injured, he'd been a month on the sideline, so not always easy. But it was a great comeback. And you know, we haven't seen that from West Coast. As I had probably said a couple of times earlier this season, and this is where I must give them credit, and you've got to do that. And Nick Natanui, I mean, that was his best game of the season, because not only did he do the great work around the middle of the ground, he actually went forward and took a couple of marks. And whilst he missed one shot at goal, he could have got two. That was his first goal of the season. That's what I want to see him doing more of. Now, if he's able to do that, and the other thing that he did a couple of times is he grabbed it and he moved it out of the middle a couple of times too, when he felt that he had some initiative, which he probably didn't do in the Essendon game, which I was sort of asking him to do when he's going up against the likes of Langford, who didn't even contest against him.
He's getting more ball, isn't he, over the last 4 or 5 weeks? There was a lot of conversation about him not finding the footy, and he came out and said, oh, my team doesn't need it. I think he is listening to the external stuff, and I think it just plays a part, and he is finding a bit more of the footy, always been great at the taps and also the clearance work, but it just helps. If you can find the footy as a ruckman, like Max Gawn, like Sean Darcy at the moment, it helps generate ball movement, because you're the free player, you create a plus one, away you go. Go, scope, you go into a forward line a bit quicker than what you would have. So I think it is important. And for him to brush it off a few weeks ago, I didn't really like that. And I've liked his response coming back and doing what he does best, but also finding a bit more of the footy.
Now, we talk about that game between West Coast and Richmond. And let's face it, they are 7th and 8th on the table. And then we go to the game that you and I watched the day before. 9th place Fremantle, because they got the chocolates against 15th place Gold Coast, who have been awful, I felt, in that game on the weekend. But, mate, at half time, I don't know about you, mate, but I wanted to go and get on the train and go home.
That was my birthday, Carl. That was the present that I got delivered in the first half. It was the worst game I've seen in the history of my time in AFL and also watching AFL. It was ugly. Look, there was a bit of pressure in the first quarter, but outside of that, the turnovers was played in the back half, and luckily in the second half, Fremantle were able to kick some goals. And it was on the back of Sean Darcy too. His development this year has been enormous. But goal kicking, so important. Only for the second time, Fremantle kick more goals than points. West Coast do it every single week. And there's an argument to say West Coast don't win that game without the accuracy. So it's so important. I think a key component of that is the players that they have shooting for goal. They're very good shots. Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about them doing more work than other clubs. I'm not so sure about that. I just think the group that they have are very good shots on goal.
Well, Josh Kennedy's moment was an electrical moment for NHP Electrical Products, 100% Australian owned and available at a recognised NHP wholesaler near you. What was your electric moments out of the weekend's action? Might have been Eagles, Dockers games, might be another game, might have been today's game. Love to hear your thoughts. Let's head to Brendan in Currumbine, who's going to join us first tonight. G'day, mate.
G'day, guys. Hey, I couldn't agree with you more. That Freo Gold Coast game was absolute tripe, and I turned over to the Wildcats at half time, and that was always tripe at the start. So it wasn't a good day for sport till the half time. Yesterday's game, two things out of that is Jack Darling is he's just got to stop playing for free kicks. He just seems to just try and lure the umpire into it. And I think the trend with footy now is if teams don't realise, as soon as they start playing some expansive running football, that's when the scoreboard starts going. And when they try, especially West Coast yesterday, when they tried to just play back in their system, that's when Richmond got on top of them and just kept running over the top of them. And then in the last quarter, they had to throw caution to the wind. And look what happened.
You're spot on. I think they need to learn from that. I've been a bit critical of the way they move the ball. They like to go slow. They're spreading it. They're waiting for things to open up. But it does give time for the opposition defence to get back. And I think by doing that from clearance, they were very good, but moving it a bit quickly, taking risk, get in there, because Richmond's defence was so good for most of the night. But they are beatable if you get it in there and you separate many of those defenders.
Both had a loose man in defence. So that was, and that was something that West Coast had clearly changed in the match that they played against Richmond. Richmond do it all the time, and West Coast did what they were doing. So there was always that plus one, which makes it difficult, which is where, you know, they're cautious in the way that they move the ball. They rely so much, or have, on their success with that marking, kicking game. And look, in the end, when you consider that they were behind, yet look at the marks inside 50, Hayes. I mean, something that I talk to you about all the time, how important it is. It was 15-6. 15-6. And, mate, it was like that for most. Like, they had double Richmond even up until the closing stages when JK took that low down and kicked the winning goal.
Yeah, it talks a lot about how they play, the West Coast Eagles. They want to kick the ball to those key forwards in their front half. But Richmond, they play a different style. And I was just blown away by the chemistry they had with their handball running towards goal. And how many shots did they have on the fly? Shea Bolton, unfortunately, wasn't his night in front of goal. He probably could have kicked three or four. But how many times does he get the ball just on the 50 running towards goal? Dustin Martin was there as well. They're the best team to watch in the competition, Richmond, no doubt for me.
Fair return. Speaking about electrical moments from Kane Lambert, mate, he'd been out for a fair while, 27 and 2 goals won. That was a very nice game that he played on the weekend.
It's never just one, is it, for Richmond? They have four or five different midfielders on any given day. One will stand up and have a better look than everybody else. Speaking of returns, Alex Pearce, that was unbelievable what he did. Ben King, like Jack Darling, they just lost confidence because of the players that were on them. And I just love what this guy's done, because he's been through a hell of a lot. He's been emotional. He's spoken about some tough times. And for him to come back, not only to get back, Carl, and walk off the ground, to get back and beat one of the key forwards in the competition, it actually changes everything for Fremantle as well, because, you know, you can get some confidence. They've got now somebody who can play back there. You get Logue back. You've got Ryan there. Hamling, I'm not so sure how long he'll be out for. Another pre-season might be good for him, but he may never come back. And then you've got Brennan Cox. It does open the possibility that Brennan Cox in time could go into the forward line, and then all of a sudden things look different in the front half of Freo.
Yeah, two guys that I've been pretty critical of, only because of their inconsistency, was Aish and Akers. And, you know, two guys they brought into that Dockers mix, and both had really good impact on the week. And I thought that...
You've been harsh on Aish this year, I reckon. I reckon he's had a good year, Aish.
Yeah, well, yeah. I just think that when the going gets tough, sometimes blokes don't get going. And where I've been a little bit critical, but I thought that he did get going on the weekend, laid his four tackles, got his hands dirty. Akers always does that. I think that he's a player that really does mix it. But I thought that as a combination, they probably played their best game for the club. Clark in Palmyra, g'day.
Yeah, hi, Hayden Cole. I'm a big Liam Ryan fan. I'd rather cat pick him up one day. He's a great guy. But he didn't have much of a game, but he set up the winning goal. So he's mercurial. He seems to pop up when he needs to.
Yeah, I think, look, from, and sorry for jumping in, Hayes, but I think that on the weekend, the good part about West Coast winning that game is that already Brendan's spoken about Jack Darling, and now Clark's rung up and spoken about Liam Ryan, and neither of them had much of an impact in that game, yet West Coast got across the line.
Wasn't a big game for Andrew Gaff either. He got going late. You could say the same about Elliot Yeo. He was pretty quiet, but his last quarter, when the team needed something, his clearance work, his inside 50s set them up, and they have been missing that player. No doubt it makes a big difference. They've still got Kelly. They've still got Shuey to come back into that side, but hopefully they give some of these kids more opportunity.
I'll give you an update. Luke Shuey playing in the Waffle this week, play 70 minutes. And Jeremy McGovern, who I had a chat to prior to the game yesterday, he says that he's coming back for the Bulldogs game. Now, whether he comes back straight into the side against the Bulldogs or has to go back through the Waffle, we'll find out. He won't like me saying that. It's 28-7.
Sports Day for Kia, the Kia Sorento, Drive Car of the Year, and Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
922-1882 is the number. I'm going to bring that on the radio in a moment about
Let's
Jack Darling.
Now,
no problem. He's not a centre-half forward.
Who is a key forward for West Coast? Is Jack Darling a key forward for West Coast?
He plays in the forward pocket.
So you're saying he's not a key forward for West Coast?
He is not a key forward, no. He does not play full forward, does not play centre-half forward. Oscar Allen and Kennedy play those two roles because they're 6'5" and he is 6'2".
So for the, doesn't matter about height.
He plays as
a key forward.
He doesn't.
So
he doesn't
in.
Play
I want you to ring
as a key forward.
And see if you agree with Paul or Carl.
The key forwards are down the spine, aren't they? Aren't they centre-half forward, full forward, centre-half
he's
back, full back, and
ruck?
He's
been doing that for 10 years for the West Coast.
Okay, but he's not. He's never
Oscar
played. He's not centre half forward, and he's not full forward. He is a forward. He's played forward pocket. He's never played in those other two positions in his life.
He's a key forward.
He's like the cameo third man on the
I've
side.
I've heard you say this a number of times about his.
And
height.
That's the facts.
It's irrelevant.
It is relevant. He does not play centre half forward and full forward.
Let's go to Anthony.
I bet you 100% there'll be no one that'll agree with you.
Righto, Anthony Inglewood. How are you, mate? What do you got for us? Is he a key forward?
There you go. Hey, well, I will, mate, because that was a good segue. I want to talk about Jake Waterman. He gets a game, he has an impact, and then he gets dropped. They bring him in at the last minute. He's got swapped over at the Essendon game. He had an instant impact. He had an impact last night. Why is he in and out of the team, mate? I know we've got a huge forward line, but I don't know, he seems like a waste. You know, coming in and out of the team, it's not good for his confidence. He can take a solid grab of the footy, and he's a great kick. So what do you think their plans are with him?
I think you've answered your own question there. They're a tall forward line, and you need speed in there. All clubs like to have three or four smaller players because defence is so important. West Coast probably go more towards attack, and that's why they've been so good in front of goal with many of those players. But a lot of teams like to have smaller players in there, and I just think he becomes that fourth or fifth key position player for them, and sometimes it's too much.
In the back, wouldn't you try him in the back line maybe? Or, you know, McGovern's not getting any younger. I mean, I don't know. It just seems like a waste of talent.
See, I think...
And he could be good trade.
I think, look, the problem is probably Jack Darling is the bloke that keeps him out of the side, to be honest. I mean, Jack Darling's 29 going on 30, and Jake's 23. Okay, so and they're very similar in height. Jake's a centimetre taller, so Jake's 6'3", and Jack's 6'2". So that's probably the scenario. You know, they're half forward flanker, forward pocket players. They're not going to be their centre half forward or full forward because essentially of the size. That's just how the game is these days. Because you know the key position players are just giants these days. Most of them are bloody 200 centimetres tall.
So he, you don't think he could fit in? I know we've never really seen him play down there, but could he fill a spot in the back line?
Well, he has. He played there only a couple of weeks ago. He was swung back.
Yeah.
And he has been swung back. Yeah. And they've tried him there, but, you know, obviously with Petrocelli and looking for some leg speed, I think that was probably why the reason why he was left out. But, mate, don't worry. As I said, I mean, he's in the sort of same competition in position as what Jack Darling is. And, you know, Jack Darling plays like he did on the weekend a couple of times in a row. Well, all of a sudden you're in for a chance.
It would be a good pickup for another club, though, Jake Waterman, if somebody came hard with a good offer, given that he is in and out. And I only look at Fremantle. Is that the type that Fremantle would love to have, Carl, down there? You talk a lot about Fremantle not having that style of player. He could be one if they target him. West Coast don't want to lose him, but and they'd want something good for him. But the other one is Jared Brandon now. With the success of some of those players coming in, he's been playing on the wing. I was excited by him. He hasn't set the world on fire. There's some inconsistencies there, and I'm not sure what position he'll end up, because most of them are taken at the West Coast Eagles. He could be one that the West Coast Eagles consider if a club comes hard for him as well. Let's go to Peter in High Wycombe. How are you, Peter?
No, we'll have to hold Pete. Pete, I don't want to cut you short, mate, because we've got to go to Chris Main, so we'll have a yak to him first, and then maybe on the back of what Maney has to say, we can get your thoughts. Just quickly on Brown, 196 centimetres, 6'5", pretty much the same height as JK. So that just gives you an idea of how big he is. We'll be back soon.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Great to have this man on the radio after a big win by Collingwood today, defeating Melbourne by 17 points on the Queen's birthday, the Big Freeze match. And we've had certainly a lot of publicity around that. It's been brilliant to see the beanies sold out. We had 9,000 beanies here in Perth, and they were sold out just last night in the match between Richmond and West Coast. But Chris Main joins us here on Sports Day after a great win today. And you send bucks out in style, Maney. Well done, mate. How are you?
Not too bad, thanks, guys. Yeah, look, pretty special day for many reasons, really. Obviously for, you know, the MND and Danaher and the family, and then also for, you know, Bucks, a champion of the club, and, you know, a pretty, I know, special moment for him and his family. So, you know, it's been a pretty special day and one that's capped off well.
Was there anything different done by Bucks in the lead up to this game being his last game?
No, everything was exactly the same. You know, his preparation and the way he kind of puts himself, you know, head first into, you know, all the work that he does behind the scenes was exactly the same. I think he was just, you know, comments of just, you know, thanking the team and the staff. I think that was probably the different parts to build up, just being more probably taking each moment in as it came and understanding that, you know, each segment of, you know, your last team meeting and then, you know, the three-quarter time, you know, huddle, it's probably the last one. So, and then, yeah, just the end bit there, just having the opportunity to speak to him in the rooms behind closed doors and just thank him for the absolute bottom of our hearts for the effort that he's done for this football club.
Was there any sort of questioning amongst the boys? Did you feel much responsibility for him losing his job, given that it's happened in the middle of the season?
Everything that happens behind closed doors, you know, we're not privy to. You know, we just try and work hard each day, try and dive into the work we need to do and then try and perform on the weekend. You know, this club's been in the spotlight. It's a big, powerful club, but it's been in the spotlight, you know, all off-season, pre-season and then during the season. So, you know, a lot of moving pieces, a lot of white noise, you know, whether that plays part on some of the players and the staff and everyone involved, but, you know, what you can try and do is control the controllables. And for us over the last few weeks, we've been able to put really good performances together and get two really good wins on the road.
Hey, Maney, what about your personal relationship with Nathan Buckley? Because it started a bit frosty. You came over from Fremantle. You were out of the team for a year there, but you've got back in there and it looks like you built a great relationship on the outside where there's a lot of trust between the two.
Yeah, look, I had a chat with him during the week and just said from the bottom of my heart, you know, it didn't start the way I was expected to. But given the way probably both parties opened ourselves up and allowed each other to probably, you know, figure out who each other was and then to start building that relationship. And I just thanked him. You know, it could have gone two ways. It could have been that's done and dusted, or we could have, you know, worked hard and given myself the best opportunity to play, get the best out of myself and get the best out of him. And I told him, you know, there'll definitely be a special place in my heart for Bucks. For that reason, and also the fact of, you know, I've been a part of his journey and he's been a part of mine. And, you know, I can always thank him for showing faith in me. We had some really good years. We nearly won a flag together. We played finals footy together. And, yeah, obviously the way it is unfolded now, and as he said, you know, everyone has their time in the game, and you both have been there. It doesn't last forever. So, you know, it's a pretty special moment. I was really pumped that I could be a part of it.
Yeah, I reckon it's pretty tough seeing what's happened to Bucks, to be perfectly honest, Maney. And obviously you'd know him probably a lot better than me. But only 9 players from the 2018 Grand Final side played today. You got guys like Darcy Cameron, who has improved his footy from where I sit, mate. Kicked 4 goals today. McCreary, Poulter, Bianco, young players, very young players. Dacos and Quainer, a couple of years in now. They've improved. And, you know, that's how I judge a coach. You know, you can't always rely on the Pendlebury and the side bottom and the main and the older blokes. It's got to come from the young crop coming through.
Yeah, that's always the case, really. You know, you've got your senior players that are going to find little ways to improve their game. But when, you know, clubs continue to play successful footy and play finals footy, it's always that middle to lower tier that are pushing the group up. Like you said, we have those names that are really putting their best foot forward. They're starting to play some consistent footy, starting to get a taste of what senior footy is. You know, some of these kids that have been drafted came out of a COVID season where they didn't play footy at all, and some have not even played against men before that are starting to get that opportunity and experience now. So we just need to keep doing the basics, keep preparing well, and keep trying to put our best foot forward. And like you said, you know, there's some good kids coming through, and hopefully some good games of football ahead of us.
What about Max Lynch, mate? He's been thrown into the hot seat since Brody Grundy was forced out with that neck injury. And, mate, 23 hit-outs to Gorn, he's 20. There's not too many that outruck him when it comes to numbers.
No, we mentioned that at halftime and at the end of the game. You know, a massive effort for him. And I think that's just the power of work that he's done. You know, he picks Brody Grundy's brain week in, week out. He works really hard. It was my first game with him, and I was really impressed with the effort that he gave. And I think for Lynchy's sake, you know, he just keeps putting his best foot forward. He's got massive strengths, and he tries to play to them. And, you know, to come up against one of the best in the business and equal it and even goes past him, it's a great effort for him tonight, and something to build on.
What about Jordan De Goey? Is it time for the next coach to come in and just settle him down in one position? Because today in the midfield, he pretty much exclusively played there, and he had the 32 disposals. He was outstanding. Best player on the ground that I saw today alongside Darcy Cameron. But being thrown around, and you would know this, it's not easy sometimes for some players to keep being thrown around like that.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. I think it's a strength that he has the ability to go forward and inside. I think it's just about finding that right balance. I think for Geordie, he's continuing to work on his own game, his own style, and what he wants to kind of show his brand to the AFL world. So, you know, I'll leave that to the coaches and the way they want to orchestrate the way he goes about it. But it's good to see Geordie putting some really good performances together.
That coach will be Robert Harvey going forward. Do you expect him to do much different taking over from Bucks?
Look, I'm not too sure. Right now, everything's just sinking in that, yeah, come, you know, after the bye, we'll have halves kind of leading the ship. And, you know, I think him and the assistant coaches will get together in the playing group, and then we'll discuss kind of how we want to attack the second half of the season. But I think over the last 2 weeks, I think the performances from the boys have been first class. And if we can just build on what we're doing now, hopefully we'll be able to challenge some other teams during the second half of the year.
16th, a game and a half out of 10th, mate. So there's not much difference, I don't think, between you and a lot of the other teams, particularly when you play that brand of footy that you played today. And, of course, you're going to have the Freo Dockers to come up against your old mob, where you were a dead-eye dick when you were back here at Freo. Now, one thing that they can't do right now is kick straight, mate. And Hayes and I almost wanted to leave at halftime on the weekend when they played the Gold Coast. I don't know if you tuned in at all, but, mate, it was hard to watch.
Yeah, look, as you know, I've got a soft spot in my heart for Freo. You know, being a life member there, and the club gives an opportunity to play AFL footy. So I have a lot of interest when they play. I like to stay in touch with the boys there. And, yeah, look, those things in the game happen, don't they? You know, players go through those moments. And, you know, if the outside noise and the white noise takes over the mind, which I've experienced before, then the big sticks become a bit daunting. So I know they're led really well by JL and Fifey, and they'll be working really hard through the week to get it done. But, you know, looking forward to coming up against them and getting the chockies, that's for sure.
Mate, we talk a lot about goal kicking on this show and always talk about you, how you were the best kick in the competition for a period there, in my opinion, and then you lost your way a bit. Can you give our listeners some insight into what was going through your mind at that particular stage where you just couldn't get them through the big sticks?
Yeah, look, 12 and 13, really good. 14, I think it was just battling body and white noise or outside noise comes in, and then you kind of lose a bit of technique, bit of mechanics, and then obviously the doubt creeps in every time. 15, steady again. And then probably since then, I've played multiple positions where I'm not really as a forward. I think it does come between the ears, goal kicking. You know, you see most kicks, if you say hit a target, you know, 15, 20 away, they hit it, but then you put the big sticks in front of them. If you don't have a strong process that can, you know, eliminate all that white noise, the chatter, and be able to hone in on something behind the goals, then it does become a little bit different because your body stiffens up. You don't have the same kicking style, and that's where the error comes in, and you're already looking before you've actually struck the footy. So, you know, that happened to me, and I believe why I was great through those years is because I did have a process. That's all I worried about, and I knew that given the way the team was playing at the time, I was going to get more than one or two looks a game. So I had confidence in what I was doing, and once you have a strong confidence in your style and your technique, then it becomes a pretty simple task.
Your coach was Ross Lyon through that period. Would you like to see him back at Collingwood with you? Not back at Collingwood, but back together with yourself, given there's been a bit of talk about him lately.
Yeah, there's always a bit of talk about Ross. I think he's popped up a few years as well of whether he's going to come back into coaching or not. I've always said he's had a great football program. He's been thereabouts. But, you know, I'm coming out of contract at the end of this year. There's a few things for me to still work out. I've got a really young family. I'm about to have my second child. Our family's all in Perth. You know, do I continue to play on or do I jump into coaching? You know, that's the decision that I'll work with my manager and my family when we get towards the end of the year.
Are you going to head back to Melbourne now that you've got a break, or what are you going to do? Are you going to get the family and go somewhere else and stay out of Melbourne?
No, we're on the same flight as Melbourne right now, flying back. So we get in tonight, and I'm back home. We're fortunate to have Britt's parents staying with us because, we're a week or a few weeks away from the second child arriving. So we're not going anywhere. We'll be close by waiting for that moment to happen.
Good on you, Marnie. Well, that'll be a sensational moment. Thank you very much for sharing some time with us tonight, mate. Take care.
No worries. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Good on you. Chris Mayne here on Sports Day. Great to have a yak to him, and well done to Collingwood today and their next opponent, Freo. And, of course, at the moment, that is scheduled round 15 at Marvel Stadium. We'll wait to see whether that actually transpires. We'll come back with more of Sports Day after this.
Sports Day for Kia. The Kia Sorento. Drive car of the year. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Oh, gee, I can't wait for Slaps and Sledges, which we are going to roll in for after 7 o'clock tonight. Craig Gabriel is going to join us as well. 922-1882 is our number. Don't be scared to give that sleep maker, the maker of Australia's mattress open line number, a call. Also have a yak after 7 to Stacey Marinkovic. West Coast Fever. Undefeated. But we'll get back into the calls. Jack Darling, is he a key forward? That's what Hayes has been proclaiming tonight. So we've just had a nice little animated discussion about Fremantle and why Blake Akers is rucking. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because there is quite a few clubs that are using little guys to actually perform that role, like Pickett and Langford we saw against West Coast with Essendon. So we'll talk about that some more after 7.
Sports Day for Kia. The Kia Sorento. Drive car of the year. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Great to have your company. 922-11882, Sleepmaker mattress number tonight. The maker of Australia's mattress for Sleepmaker. And Slaps and Sledges, if you want to sledge me for crowing too early on the weekend, or you want to sledge Hayes for saying that Jack Darling's a key forward, you're more than welcome for Sullivan Logistics. 3 votes for storage and overnight freight. They never say no. Maybe you want to sledge something out of the French Tennis Open, because we are about to have a chat to Craig Gabriel, who joins us on the wrap of that. I think we find him in London tonight. You've been on the magic carpet already, Craig, and you've got out of France, have you? How are you, mate?
Already, absolutely. Didn't waste any time. Already just got into London a little while ago. I'm just heading to the apartment in Wimbledon to get settled in for the next 4 weeks. But, it was a great job done by the French Federation in Paris. Roland Garros was an exceptional event, considering all the issues that they had to deal with. they really delivered, and it was a superb couple of weeks over there.
Now, what did you enjoy the most, the women's final on Saturday or the men's final last night?
I think if I really had to pick one match, it was Djokovic-Nadal. I mean, that was one of the most extraordinary matches of recent months, at least. But probably preferred the men's final, going to five sets and the way it swayed back and forth and the history behind Novak winning over there. It was quite exceptional. So, yeah, probably that. But then there was also the backstory on Barbora Krejcikova with her victory and the connections that she had with the late Jana Novotna, who was a Wimbledon champion, and I knew Jana really well. So there was, and then she goes and wins the doubles as well, and the first woman to do that in Paris since Mary Pierce in 2000.
What did Novak do to turn it around in that game? He was two sets to love down against Tsitsipas, but he found a way, and he has a way of doing that.
Yeah, look, he does, and he did it a few times during the French. You know, when he, after a couple of sets, he decided he'd, you know, he'd go off court and change clothes and come back a bit fresher, and he said, you know, just a different look just stirs him up and, you know, changes things around. And, you know, in one sense, it also breaks a little bit of the momentum or the focus of his opponent, and it's totally legal. I wouldn't even call it gamesmanship. It was straightforward. So, you know, and I think Stefanos was starting, he said he couldn't understand why his game dropped off a little bit after the second set. So that's what it would come down to. I mean, you know, and to try and beat Novak across five sets, that is as tough as beating Rafa in Paris, which Novak did.
He's getting closer, though, isn't he, Tsitsipas? And the next generation,
yep.
We're seeing a closer look at what's going to be in the future. It hasn't happened just yet, but I get the sense it's not far away.
Well, we're seeing it. We are. I mean, remember Dominic Thiem won the U.S. Look, and Alexander Zverev, Daniel Medvedev in the Australian Open final. I mean, he's only 23. So, yeah, they're making the inroads, and I think that's what's exciting now. And, you know, I'm not saying there is a change of guard or anything at this point, but we're seeing the competition is getting tighter, and that's what's exciting about it all.
Craig, I've been saying for a long time, 2 years, that Novak Djokovic is the greatest player of all time. He's won all his titles up against Federer and Nadal, and the others can't say that. And he now becomes the first of them to win at least two Grand Slams out of all of them. So that's a fantastic achievement. And I just felt that period he had where he dominated the game, that was the highest standard of tennis that I've ever seen anyway.
Yeah, look, it is pretty extraordinary. And he made it very clear. A lot of players will say, you know, when they're going into one of the majors, they'll say, oh, yeah, we'd like to win, and, you know, this, that, and the other, and they play their chances down or play the situation down. He made it absolutely clear he is gunning for Wimbledon and then maybe the Olympic gold medal. I think what happens with him going to Tokyo is going to be dependent on what happens at Wimbledon for him. If he wins Wimbledon, I think he'll go to Tokyo, and as a result, he's going to go for the Golden Slam, which would be all four majors and the Olympic gold medal. It's only been done once ever, and that was with Steffi Graf in 1988. I was there for all of those.
I think Roger, 2012, he won a silver, didn't he, in the singles? So, he's still my pick, and he's much, much older. I mean, he's nearly 40 years of age, and still playing at such a high standard. And he'll be in action tonight at the Halle Open. Jordan Thompson on court at the moment, Craig.
Yep.
Will you get a look at the Halle Open, or what's your plan heading into Wimbledon?
Well, I'm going to be in London, so I'll keep tabs on what's happening at Queen's Club, which has got a miserable draw. I mean, a few Australians, but it's not a great draw. And then I'll be keeping watch on Halle. Roger seems to dominate Halle for most times. So we'll see how it all works out. But there's quite a bit happening over the next couple of weeks.
Thank you very much for joining us, mate, throughout the course of the French Tennis Open. And I'm sure that we will be here on Nine Radio touching base with you when it comes to the Wimbledon tournament that will be getting underway soon. Cheers, mate.
Thanks, mate.
Good on you, Craig Gabriel, there with the French Tennis Open wrap as we head to the calls. Hayes, slaps and sledges time. Come on. I wonder if there's anyone out there who wants to give us a slap or a sledge. We'd love to hear from you. From Sullivan Logistics, your trusted storage and overnight freight experts. Sullivan Logistics, in it for the long haul. To David in Belia. G'day, mate.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'll slap the Collingwood Football Club for a start, mate, because to actually play like they did today but not be able to do it all year is a blight on themselves for having to actually stand up for today but haven't done it all year for Buck. So I'll give them a little slap for that. But,
well, that's a sledge. A slap on the back is a slap on the back for good, and it's a sledge, so you're sledging them.
I'll give them a slap across the head for that.
Okay.
But anyway, okay. Key forward.
Yes.
I classify Darling as a key forward, so I don't have to agree with Paul, which is a terrible thing to do going against
Why?
A good eagle.
No, that's you fine. Can't. Why is that terrible
no,
to do?
No, that's fine.
Because you're a docker and Carl's an eagle. And,
oh,
you
come
know, you
on,
can't
David.
Go,
no. We overlook that.
We're analysts.
My reason is he, just because he's not a full forward or the centre-half forward, he's still a focal point to kick the ball to. He doesn't crumb the ball off the ground like the smaller boys do. He's a focal point up forward, which makes
he's
him
a marking
forward. That would be just the same as saying Barras and Shepherd aren't key defenders because they're not a halfback or fullback.
What are you saying, that Shepherd doesn't crumb the ball?
No, but what I'm saying is a key backman for us.
Yeah, I don't think he is.
Well, you take him out of the side and watch how many balls will go past him.
Yeah, but I think
just because you're not a fullback or a centre half back or a full forward or a centre half forward.
Yeah, I think Barras McGovern Hearn. I think Barras McGovern are the keys. And I think that Hearn is probably the third. You know,
Schofield was the third.
Hearn would play on Darling if he was in, this is where it goes towards Hayes's argument. There's no doubt that he is a marking forward. Jake Waterman's a marking forward. This is where you've got the difference between a small nippy forward. But what Brad Shepherd's got the ability to do is play on a tall and a small. So Dave, that's great.
But you've also got to remember, Carl, we had Phil Matera as a key forward.
He's a small 5'11", forward.
6 foot. Yeah, but he was our key forward at one stage. He was kicking all the goals because we had nobody else.
Yeah,
so
see,
size doesn't come into it. It's the position you're playing, and he is a focal point for when they come forward. They look.
Yeah, well, as I said, Hayes, that you've got the same view as Hayes. That's fine. I mean, but for me, it's full forward, centre half back, full back. They're the key positions in a football side. So when you're putting it up and you put the magnets on the board, but Hayes will argue that when the magnets go on the board, that Darling's at centre half forward, and that's fine. That's the debate we're having. Let's try others. Alex, thanks for your call, Dave. Alex is in North Lake. G'day.
G'day, Carl and Paul. I'd like to give Darling a slap. Looking at the AFL statistics tables, he's listed as 191 centimetres tall, which is your height, Carl.
Yep.
So he's on the short side, yet he averages 1.93 goals a game. In comparison, you got Gunston, who's 193 centimetres tall, 2 centimetres taller than Jack, averages 1.9 goals a game. And Charlie Dixon, who's 200 centimetres, averages 1.62 goals a game. So he's a focal point, and he takes good marks, and he's quite mobile.
And he's an excellent player. There's no doubt about that. For a long period of time, he's been able to do it alongside Josh Kennedy. I was feeling up until... Well, I felt he was going past Josh Kennedy in importance in the team. Didn't play well on the weekend. And Kennedy, on the back of a rest, showed that perhaps that's how they should treat him going forward, not only this year, but maybe next year. Keep him fresh, because he played a bit further up the ground on the weekend too and was good around the midfield. He actually kicked the ball inside the forward 50 on a few occasions, Josh Kennedy.
In the Richmond game, Richmond are very good at blocking, holding and pushing. And Jack was the beneficiary of a lot of that on Sunday's game.
Yeah.
I don't know if you noticed it, but they work as a team, the Richmond defence. And
they do, absolutely.
Very good at,
they hold out and they go close to the line. Sometimes they go over the line, but they do use really good chemistry between those defenders to know who's going to come over the top and who's going to keep their opponent down.
Good on you. Thanks for your call, Alex. Pete in High Wycombe, good evening.
You personally first. Did you ever play centre forward for West Coast?
Did I?
Yeah.
Yes.
6'2"?
Yeah, but I was about the third or fourth tallest bloke in my team, mate.
No, I'm being tricky, mate. But,
it's amazing
one you
how
age.
Big they are now.
Of course you wouldn't have. But the main slap I give myself, as you know, I've been probably a bit of an advocate of getting rid of Bucks over the last little while. I've spoken to you guys about that. And now today, the Pies did their good thanks to him, which was sensational, I thought. But my big good slap is for the kid I've been talking to you about as well, Tracy. He's getting better and better.
Last couple of weeks been very good. I mean, you've just got to persist, don't you? At 18, like it's like Thilthorpe. He's 18 as well, hey? Those two kids have been real good.
Same draft. Future. One was a rookie list selection. The Fremantle Dockers have done so well with that pick. Riley Thilthorpe was picked two for the Adelaide Crows, so they're the difference. And like he is going to be a great player. To see what he's doing at 18 compared to some other key forwards that normally take to 21, 22, 23. Mm. And he's only going to get better when he gets Tabanar back into the team and a few others around him and the ball movement improves for the Fremantle Dockers. I think there's a lot of upside. And we've been waiting for another forward to come for the Fremantle Dockers to take pressure off Lobb so he can concentrate more on the backup ruckman so that Akers doesn't have to go in there. And I think they found him. I think if they could just add one more, that'll be a good thing for them going forward.
Good on you, Pete. Love it. Thank you, mate. Thanks to Alex. Thanks to Dave. Thanks for your contributions. Anyone wants to have a slap or a sledge, you can. We're going to have a chat to Stacey Marinkovic after the break. Sleepmaker, the maker of Australia's mattress. Our number 922 11 882 19 after 7. Welcome back to Sports Day. Great to have your company and nice to have Stacey Marinkovic on the program. Netball update for Rosewood West Perth. Welcome home. Opening mid-2021. Stace, jump on the caboose. You're still undefeated.
Yeah, really, really pleased with the win this weekend. We knew that they sort of have a presence when they come up against us and for us to get out there and play in front of their home crowd. It was a really good four-quarter performance.
You've now played against every team and you've beaten every team.
Yeah, it's a pretty good feeling. I think it's just a really good reflection of how hard the girls have worked, and I guess they've really earned their time off, coming into the bye week. And, we've just got to get the balance right of training and refreshing mind and body so that we can go again for the next half of the season.
Did you tinker anything with your first quarters? Because the last two have been pretty good, or was it more attitudinal?
I think it's just been an actual connection of both our attack and defence. Connection across the entire court. I think we've had to understand that we need both areas of the court contributing at the same time. But it's more that our defenders needed to be attacking really well in the first quarter and our attackers defending. So it was actually helping support either ends of the court that I think changed our intent and our focus.
We talk a lot about your goal shooters as well, but your defence has been outstanding too, led by Courtney Bruce. But Sunday, Ari Yang, some have been talking about her being included into your Diamonds team, and Frances Bayman, the three of them working really well, and you've also got Olivia Lewis that can come on and give a chop out when required.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the combination between Courtney and Sunday has certainly evolved, but they're sort of reaping the rewards, I guess, from the midcourt doing their work out the front as well. So it's really been a true unit defence. And Courtney's leadership is certainly continuing to mature and the way in which she's been able to get the girls connecting and communicating has been, really, really good.
You went with Jess Anstey starting in the centre position up against Kim Ravalian. How do you see that matchup? Because Kim's a star player.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously is known for her physical capacities and her ability to run out games hard. But I thought Jess had the wood over, I guess, the way in which Jess was able to pick up some good ball with her intercepts. But just the way in which I think her and Verity only had three turnovers each for the entire game with the amount of supply that we had and obviously getting up to 79 goals. There's a lot of ball going through their hands and it's obviously going through really cleanly.
Now, when it comes to keeping the momentum going, you've done all the hard work. You've got yourself up into the top two. You've beaten every team, as Hayes said. The challenge now, Stace, is to keep it going.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's always the thing coming into a bye is you've got strong momentum. So how do you get the balance of making sure that the players get some downtime because, they do need to have some time away from netball and actually catch up with family and just have a bit of a relax. But it's making sure also that we still got the same attention to detail in our preparation. And I think the conversation, we're about to have is around, we've got a run of home games. We actually haven't had that before, so it's not being too comfortable at home, but making sure that our environment is really threatening to anyone that comes into it.
Well, you've got a massive July, haven't you? Your first game after your bye is against the Vixens, and then you're away against the Swifts, and then the Lightning, the Thunderbirds and Collingwood all at home all in a row. So certainly a nice little run there. Just from your perspective, given that you have got to this point undefeated, played every team, who do you think is shaping as the team that is going to be toughest to beat once we get to the business end? Or are you not looking that far ahead?
Yeah, not looking that far ahead, to be honest. I think at different points in games, we've been challenged by different attributes of the different sides. I think Firebirds is obviously a team that can score really well, and they've certainly challenged us a lot in the past. And it took us, large part of the quarters to just grind it out and absorb pressure and, to be able to accumulate that for the last quarter. So I think there's a lot of teams that are starting to build some momentum now, and it'll be interesting to see what happens for half the teams that continue to play on the split round, whether they take the momentum into a break, and just how people back up into a second half of the season, how the bodies are and all those type of things. But we know we've got more growth, and we'll just continue to stay in our bubble, measure our performance and hopefully keep taking steps forward.
Stay, speaking of how the bodies are, seems like that your girls, for the first part anyway, have got through pretty well. How are you tracking overall in that area?
Yeah, really, really pleased. I think our strength and conditioning coach is pretty wrapped to be able to score 21 goals in the last quarter, this weekend after seven hard games and also being away and then everyone being still available to play, I think is a good recognition of the work that he's done with the girls, but also just how professional they are in their recovery and making sure they're doing all the little things to make sure they can keep backing up week in, week out.
You shot well on the weekend. We know Janelle Fowler hardly ever misses, but it looks like she's improved again this year with her percentage. And also Sarah Glasgow, she shot the lights out, didn't miss on the weekend as well. And then when you did make the change, Teague Neild was even pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. Our goal attack, got to that 85% across both players going through the position. And I think that's the thing. We're a double threat to post now and also a threat to the two-point shot. So we're making defenders guess. And I guess with the way in which our mid-quarter supplying the ball to them, it's giving us a lot of opportunity. So really pleased with the progress of Alice and both Sasha Young. Players still evolving and learning and growing their craft, and obviously the experience of Janelle is really helping support that.
Has Janelle had a chance to get home and see her family throughout COVID, or she's just been stuck here the whole time? And how's she going if that's the case?
Yeah, no, she's in Australia. She came out, the beginning of the year, and there's just no way to get back to Jamaica and then come back again without all the quarantine and a lot of travel. So, she'll stay put. She knows that, what she has to do to be able to play the season. But she relishes the opportunity when she gets to go home to Johanna, her daughter, and her partner over there. And then hopefully at some stage they'll be able to come out here when things relax a little bit and hopefully COVID gets more under control.
Now, does the coach get a break or not?
I've still got some games to watch. Obviously, got my Diamonds hat on over the weekend, making sure you see all the players out on court. Certainly I'll have some time just to refresh. I think it's just as important that you come out with the same enthusiasm and energy. And, we've got to make sure we do our mid-season review so that we know what we're targeting. So, mixed. But I want to keep my finger on the pulse to make sure that we make the most of this season.
Well done. You're doing a great job. Thanks for chatting to us, Stace, and we'll keep it going. It's done
Excellent.
Pretty well
Thanks
up to this
much.
Point. Good on you.
Sounds good.
See ya. Stacey Marinkovic, West Coast Fever coach. Live aged carefree. Book your virtual tour at rosewoodcare.org.au. Well done to the Fever. As we go to Ryan in Leederville, who joins us. G'day, Ryan.
Hey, boys. Good show.
Far away, mate.
I just want to talk about the obvious thing, I think, the last couple of weeks, the Eagles, the big change they've made. Previously, they've been going in far too tall. Three key forwards, two key defenders plus Rotham, two key rucks, and Waterman and Brand. Obviously, Brand has been out with an injury. Waterman's been the sub or thereabouts. They just haven't been as tall, which has allowed them to play a couple of extra runners. And as a result, they're actually running out games. They just look better. There's a better team balance than we've seen earlier in the year.
They were still pretty tall because Allen came back in, Kennedy came back in, and in the end, Petrocelli went out, and Jake Waterman came back in, Ryan. So they were still pretty tall.
To an extent, but there was no Bailey Williams. Obviously, Allen pinched in the ruck, and also Brandon wasn't there. So, yeah, I hear what you're saying. Could still be tall. They're still a little bit tall, but weren't as tall as previous weeks. And you saw what happened. They played a couple of extra mids. Look at Luke Edwards. Look at Luke Foley. So, they're running out games far better than they were in the early part. Let's not forget that St Kilda loss and the others. So, they just look better. There's a better team balance there at the moment.
Yeah, there's no doubt they look better. They played a really good brand, and it was a brand that I questioned halfway through that last quarter when they actually dug deep and actually fought back once headed, because that's something that they'd been a little bit disappointing with in a few of their previous games, and particularly in their last quarters, Hayes. They'd been very, very disappointing, particularly at home, in the last quarters, and that was one where they actually turned it around.
That was the knock on them. A lot of people were starting to question their character in some of those close games, and they weren't fighting through it, and you get that when you don't finish off games well, but they found something when needed, and to stop Richmond, who were flying, their ball movement through the middle, as I spoke about before, was just unbelievable to watch. They stopped that. Dustin Martin had a chance to put him away. He missed. He flirted with form. He tried to take the player on, and from that moment on, they had a sniff. And you could even sense that Adam Simpson could sniff it too in the box. They were still three goals down, and he believed. And I think every player out there believed that they could get home. And the 50,000 people in support obviously played a part too.
Beautiful. Thanks for your call, Ryan. We need a clearer commitment. On the other side, more of your calls, slaps and sledges. We'll update sport for the Bottle-O. Got to love your local. Got to love the Bottle-O. It's 28-8.
Sports Day for Kia, the Kia Sorento, Drive Car of the Year, and Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Great to have your company on the program, and just having a little bit of a reflect on the team on the weekend. And with the point that was being made by our previous call there in Ryan, against GWS a couple of games ago, sort of Williams was the bloke, Williams and Brander, Kennedy, Barris, Nat Nui, Allen. So they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 blokes that were sort of 194 centimetres plus. On the weekend, they had 5. But they also had Waterman, who's 193, Darling's 191, Yo's 192, Rotham's 193, and Redden's 190. So they're all the guys that fit into that. And we were talking about, say, Jack Darling, and as to whether he could move up through the midfield, like Yo and Redden are playing. He's similar size to those blokes, and it's probably a situation where, you know, could Elliot Yo go forward and take the sorts of marks?
No.
You don't reckon he could?
It's a craft, Cole. You can't teach it.
You don't reckon Yo could?
Paddy Cripps has tried to go forward and take marks as a key forward.
I reckon Yo would be all right, but obviously they need him in the guts.
Oh, absolutely, given what they've missed. And he gives them something different in the midfield. If he's not there, then you've got Kelly that's pretty good coming out the front, but Sheed and also Andrew Gaff and Redden, a bit more accumulator types. I think he gives that ability to defend first, but then also win those clearances and add the offence.
And I think too, I mean, I thought Redden was outstanding on the weekend. I mean, he and Yo just seem to be a little bit more agile than Jack Darling. Like, he doesn't seem to be as agile or move as fluently for as long as what those guys do.
Yeah, two different players, but Jack Redden would be right up there in their best and fairest this year. He's playing a pretty good season right now. Nat Nui, of course, is playing pretty consistent footy. He was good on the weekend, but there was a lot to like about them. And Richmond too, don't write them off too soon.
Let's update some sport for those of us that have maybe just tuned in tonight, been working hard today. Great range, friendly service, they're independently owned by the locals. Gotta love your local, gotta love the Bottle O. The Wildcats are away against Illawarra Hawks. Brian Gorge looking a little bit tense on the sideline, and it is underway. Nil all, about to have the jump start, so the tip-off is about to occur, so we'll keep you up to date as that game unfolds tonight.
He's out there, is he? Mitch Norton, he's been past fit to play. That's a good one. Big game for Luke Travis. He was the point guard and did a pretty good job in the absence, but imagine if they win this, go through, and Melbourne United a bit shaky too, because they're going to game 3 against Phoenix.
Yeah, unbelievable turnaround that was by the Phoenix on the weekend too, so that happens tomorrow night, Hayes, so who would have thought? A 90-79 victory yesterday. And look, I was
sort of wondering whether the Wildcats would be able to get the job done after I heard that Norton had gone out early. But, gee, no Cotton, no Norton, no problem. Well done. Good job. Now, a couple of other things that, and I know we did some slaps and sledges earlier, but in the news, David McKay sent straight to the tribunal. Sam Wicks has been offered a one-week suspension. I reckon he can get off that, but we'll see whether the Swans want to challenge. The two that I reckon should have got a week were Taylor Walker and Ben King, who have both... They were both whacked their respective opponents. One was Luke Ryan, smashed him straight in the head, Ben King, and he was looking at his head. Taylor Walker, likewise, neither of them were going for the ball. They weren't trying to knock the ball away. They had double arms and elbows and cracked their bloke straight in the head, and they're going to get fined.
It's inconsistent, isn't it, when you've got a predetermined decision like they have made, and then you've got the McKay one where he's going for the ball. He's originally thinking about getting the ball. Is it going to come to me first? Is it not? Am I going to do it? How am I going to protect myself? Split second decision where these other guys are making their decisions well and truly before they make contact.
I think we've said this before. In those other couple of cases, in Walker's and King's case, they you know, Ryan, whilst he was holding his head, got up, right, and played on. It's outcomes based. Hunter Clark, Jager O'Meara. Jager O'Meara's out for a couple of weeks with concussion, and now Hunter Clark's got a broken jaw, and David McKay goes straight to the tribunal. So that is the difference. Kayleigh McCann, a world record, unbelievable, and only 19 years of age, and it's also a very good sign that Ariane Titmus, from a time perspective in the 400 freestyle, an Australian Commonwealth record, 356.9 seconds, second fastest in history, only by behind the world record holder in Katie Ledecky, and the second fastest this year as well. So she is in ripping form, and a big slap on the back for Emily Seebohm, who becomes the only the second swimmer in Olympic history to compete at four Olympic Games. She finished second behind Kayleigh McKeon in the 100-metre backstroke, and only Liesl Jones has made it to four Olympic Games in the pool. So it's a wonderful achievement.
It certainly is. Are you getting excited yet, Carl? Because it feels like now, once you get to the Olympic swimming trials, that the Olympics aren't far away.
You know, the thing, I just don't want it to turn into a farce. And, you know, like, I've been heartened by a lot of these other tournaments, like what's happened at the French Open. There was a couple of the athletes that tested positive. They were able to keep them under control, keep them in quarantine. The great part is that all of the athletes are going to be injected. So, you know, hopefully they're not going to, if they do get sick, they're not going to get really sick
vaccinated,
like we've seen other people. So they've been vaccinated. And, yeah, I just see it as a massive logistical operation, because when you talk about tennis matches, you're talking about far less number of people being involved. There is going to be thousands of athletes converge on Tokyo. Now, how they perform that operation, whether they get them in and get them out of the village once they've competed their events, whether there'll be the same sort of interaction between the different competing, whether they be teams or individuals from all of those countries. I think it's going to be a very different Olympic Games, and there certainly won't be anyone in the stands from what I'm hearing anyway.
And the volunteers too. There's normally thousands and thousands of volunteers that normally rub shoulders with many of the athletes. It's going to be different, but when you see the passion of all those that are making the team, and we had the rowing team announced, we had the hockey teams announced as well, it's all worthwhile from their perspective. They just want the chance to go and compete. That's their dream, and they deserve that.
I think that where the IPL, if we use that as an example, fell down, it came around those that were coming into the ground, that were looking after the ground and that were cleaning up the grounds and that were, you know, maybe preparing pitches and a lot of that. Now, I just wonder, is that going to be handled by the Japanese community? Are they all going to be in isolation? How does the food get in there? Because we're talking a couple of weeks, and who is going to be doing all that sort of stuff? They're not going to have to be cleaning out rubbish after people, so you're not going to have a contingent of people coming into stands and performing that action like we see in a massive way at this stadium. You can imagine, wouldn't you, in Japan, if there was a whole big crowd, like we saw yesterday, 50,000 people. And as you and I leaving after we finished our shift on radio yesterday, there's like there's hordes and hordes of people who are then set with the task of cleaning up all the junk that people leave behind.
Absolutely. A lot of people go through, but it's just how transmissible the disease is over there. I think they're getting it under control. And as I said before, the athletes, they need it, they want it, they've worked hard for it, and hopefully they all get a chance to perform.
Speaking of the Olympic Games, Nick D'Agostino Moreno is going to leave the Perth Glory in the back of the Olympic Games. He's 23. He's playing with the Oli Roos at the moment, but he is going to Tokyo. 5 goals for Glory this season, second to Chris Economidis, so the second best scorer for us here. And just lastly, Hayes, before we head to a break, because we are going to come back and get into your Kia top seven. I know you've been preparing for this all day, but gee, I tell you what, the vision that has been howled down by many around the world on the back of Denmark and Inter Milan soccer player Christian Eriksen suffering a cardiac arrest on the field. That was against Finland on Saturday. He was administered life-saving cardiac massage, only 29 years of age. He may never play again, but thankfully he's alive, and it seems from all reports that he's going to be okay. But, gee, mate, that vision was very distressing. You could see the players on the field and the emotion that was pouring out from that, and there's some very angry people that were watching it in their living rooms.
Oh, absolutely. It was unbelievable to see many of the fans trying to sort of stand in the way so people couldn't see through, and just the emotion that was coming out from many of those players that are obviously friends and teammates with him, and the uncertainty about the outcome. They were lucky to get him back, but hopefully he gets a full recovery. He might not play again, but just goes to show you how careful you've got to be.
We'll try and get one of our Western Force duo on as well. Tamani or Kai Tuhu have both been named in the Wallaby squad for the Test Series against France next month. Dave Rennie has named his squad today. So well done on those two for getting in that squad, and we will try and track them down during the week. Illawarra out to a fast start. It's 9-4. Timeouts being called for the Wildcats. 5:28 in the first half to play, in the first quarter, sorry, in the first quarter to play. But Illawarra off to a fast start, and Paul Hazelby with his Kia top seven after this.
Sports Day for Kia, the Kia Sorento, drive car of the year, and Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Welcome back. And Perth, unbelievable shooting tonight. Gee, I tell you what, last game that they played here at RAC Arena, they were ordinary. Illawarra, since the timeout, haven't scored. It's now 12-9, the last 6 points to the Wildcats, 3:55 to go in the first quarter. But we need to hand over the microphone to my co-host here, in Paul Hazelby, for the Kia Sorento, the car, the drive car of the year for his Kia top seven.
Well, you know, 21 years ago, Carl, I won the Rising Star, the AFL Rising Star Award. I did. I got $20,000. To put into a fund.
Yeah.
Made some
still
money on that. No, I don't. I wish I had kept it in there, though. Took it out when it was about $26,000 and did some other things with it. But this is the current market. Nick Cox is the favourite from the Bombers, $3, with Tom Green. He's also $3. Matt Rowe, not nominated yet, $7.50. Made his comeback on the weekend. Lachlan Scholl, $11. Chad Warner, $12. James Jordan, $13. Jackson, $13. Good again today. Giorgiardi, $17. I think the market's got it a bit wrong, because I'm going to give my top seven heading towards the back end of the year. At number seven, I do have Lachlan Scholl from the Adelaide Crows. It's going to be hard for him to win because he fell out of the team. He was playing well, but his form has dropped off a little bit, which can happen with young players. But he's averaged 18 disposals across the early part of the season. He's kicked 3 goals and 3 score involvements per week from him. At number six, up the road at the Port Adelaide Football Club, is Mitch Georgiades. It's hard to sort of put midfielders with key forwards and ruckmen, but I'm going to do my best. But Georgiades has been outstanding from a goal-kicking point of view. For a young player, he's got 18 goals in his first real season, 11 disposal average, but also 5 score involvements per week. That's a pretty good performance from Georgiades, but he too has tapered off a bit in recent weeks. At number five, I've got James Jordan from the Melbourne Football Club, playing in a very good midfield, averaging 17 disposals, very classy player, 4 goals and 4 score involvements from him as well. Nick Cox, now he's the favourite. I think he's had some good games, and I think, Carl, he'll end up being the best out of all of them. But right now, from what I've seen this year, he hasn't been the best across the early part of the season. He's averaged 13 disposals. He's got 8 goals and 4 score involvements per week from Nick Cox. So I think there's some value to be found. At number three, it's this week's nomination, Riley Filthorpe, the number 2 pick from last year. He kicked 5 goals on debut. He kicked 3 on the weekend. He was the match winner. He had 16 disposals. He's got 16 goals for the year. He's only played the 8 games, and he's averaging 11 disposals and 5 score involvements. At number 2, I've got Luke Jackson from the Melbourne Football Club. He's really coming on for a big play in his second season. He's sharing his time with Max Gawn. He's finding plenty of the footy around the ground. He had 21 disposals today, Carl, and 2 goals. He's kicked 7 goals for the year, 5 score involvements from him per week, and 14 disposals as an average. That's a good average for a ruck forward in this competition. And at number 1, I've got Tom Green from the Giants. He finds plenty of the footy. He's good on the inside. He's a bull. He's quite clever and creative with his handball. He's kicked the 7 7 goals, so he's pushing forward as well. He too has had 5 score involvements per week. So that's how I've rated them. Scholl, Georgiades, Jordan, Cox, Phil Thorpe, Jackson and Green. So there's a bit of value to be had, in my opinion.
Yeah, Green for me. I think that he's been number one from where I sit. For the 7-seat Kia Sorento, which has just been crowned the drive car of the year. Player of the round, Hayes, for expert car service you can rely on. You visit repcoservice.com. I sort of went back to the first game of the round, Port Adelaide and Geelong. Connor Rosie kicked 5, then Darcy, Jeremy Cameron comes over the top and kicks 5. The Hawk had 8 shots and kicked 4 goals, 4. But then I was looking at a couple of the crazy games on the weekend, and the Phil Thorpe performance that has got him the vote with the Peter Wilson sort of...
like a cork in the ocean.
Yeah, it was the first thing I sort of tweeted was like, and people said, oh, you can't take that one, that it's Dennis's. And I said, well, I didn't take it. I said it was just like, that was the sort of kick that it was over his head. Did you see the one from Toby Green, by the way, his head in general play?
So smart. He's so clever.
But he missed his teammate, but he did try to do it, didn't he?
Look, I settled for his teammate in Josh Kelly from the Giants. He was outstanding. 39 disposals he had, and kicked the 2 goals in that draw. 12 score involvements.
What about the Josh yesterday?
Yeah, Kennedy, I gave him 3 votes for his performance yesterday. Well, best on ground. I think we've got to start rewarding goal kicking a bit more. Josh Kelly, 39 and 2. If you do that, you deserve it.
All right, your book at Ultra Lube in Midland, your local Repco authorised service centre. Now, it's 19 to 13. In fact, take that back. A long 3 range. Gee, I tell you what, it's unbelievable when the radar is on for the Wildcats. 22 to 13. Now, what a turnaround. They were trailing by 6 the last time I looked. Now, with only a minute to play. So in 4 minutes, they have really taken charge. They've only allowed Illawarra to score 2 points while they've piled on 16 themselves, Hayes.
Well, it's been Todd Blanchfield. What a recruit he's been. He's got 10 points early in this game, and the other one with 3 points down the bottom, Clint Steindl, who got 12 in the second game. So look for him from the 3-point range, but they find a way, don't they, the Perth Wildcats? That's a good start at home.
No, I just wonder how Robert Beaver's feeling right now, who was
our humble
producer. He's doing some great work at doing the traffic there at 882 6BR and panelling for Ollie these days. But he was a very big advocate for the Wildcats were only a one man show.
He basically said if you throw Bryce Cotton and a team around him, you'll win anyway. So, without Bryce Cotton,
they're no good.
Exactly. This flies in the face, the performance they're putting on. Look, they didn't start too well without him. They lost a couple of times, but he might be right. If they don't win tonight, then it's curtains.
He also said Gold Coast would make the 8, and thankfully I'm looking pretty good there right now.
Slaps and sledges. I've been waiting all night to give it to the Gold Coast Suns. I'm so disappointed in that team. And I think I did it about 4 weeks ago when they disappointed me.
You said take the oxygen out of there.
It's time, Carl. I'm done with them. Stewie Jew is in trouble, and he's been a big fan of ours on this show, but they need to make change because it's not happening for them. Rao, Anderson, they were back into the side, particularly Rao. Bowe's come back in. Lukosius, King, Rankin, they're not playing good enough footy. They've got Ballard as well. And it's just going to be a matter of time until all those players start to leave again and we go through the same cycle.
They're real thin, though, in the big man department. They lost Witts. They lost Collins prior to the game. They've lost Rory Thompson, who was going to hold down a key position post. Sam Day's been injured for most of the season. Now, whether you like it or not, he is and was a key position forward for them. So he's missing at the moment. Not sure that Burgess and particularly when you look at their defensive end with Caleb Graham, I'm not sure that that he is going to be able to hold down positions long term. I think Ballard's a good player. He probably had his colours lowered, I thought, on the weekend. But overall, mate, they just don't have enough big guys and not enough quality big guys. King is going well, but they don't have too many like him, so they've got to have a real focus in that area in the draft. We're going to declare a commitment back soon.
Sports Day for Kia, the Kia Sorento, Drive Car of the Year, and Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Quarter time in the basketball, Perth 23, Illawarra 15. And I'll tell you what, another player of the round today, you can book it to Ultra Tune Lube in Midland. Your local Repco authorised service centre was Jordan Ngoi. He was awesome today in Collingwood's victory over Melbourne. On this day for Baron O'Day, because the little things are everything, on this day in 1998, the Chicago Bulls beat the Utah Jazz 87-86 in Game 6 of the NBA NBA Finals, clinching their third consecutive title and their sixth in eight seasons. So a magnificent performance there. The MVP, Michael Jordan, for the third straight year and the sixth time. So there you go. Quite significant on this day in 1998. For Baron O'Day, don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Thanks for your company tonight. We'll keep you up to date as the basketball rolls on through tonight on 882 6PR. But right now, it is time for the 8 o'clock news. We'll see you tomorrow.